Hello everyone, welcome to JTalk Extra Time. John Steele here, as usual. We're going to try and run through all of the latest J2 action from the weekend. And of course, Magic Mike Innes will be along later with JTalk Short Corner. All of the latest J3 news is coming your way in that segment. Joining me to talk J2 this week, though, it's a welcome return to a man in demand, Johnny Nicol. Johnny, how are you doing?
Yeah, I'm doing pretty good, John. We've got plenty of goals to talk about and a fair few incidents, so I'm looking forward to getting into it. How about yourself?
Yes, all good here, thanks. Goals and incidents, yeah, that's what we're here for. I'm just glad we could wrestle you away from Big Pod for a week, Johnny. I know the phone's red hot these days, isn't it? So yeah, good to get a chance to talk to you again. And I think last time you were on, we had fewer games to talk about, didn't we? It was the typhoon affected round of J2 fixtures from about a month or so back. So yeah, I'm hoping we can make full use of your resources for the 11 games from the weekend. Without further ado then, Johnny, let's talk about J2. Round 31 took place over the weekend, and we'll start at the top of the table, if that's okay. Quite a symmetrical weekend, I suppose you could say, for the top two, Kyoto and Iwata. They both picked up comfortable 2-0 home wins. In Kyoto's case, they were too strong for Tochigi, with Takuya Ogiwara and Takumi Miyayoshi on target. A very nice passing move for the opening goal in this game just before the half hour. Ogiwara played in Peter Utaka on the left side of the penalty area, and Utaka cut the ball back for Ogiwara to clip in a first-time shot off the far post. Utaka should have made it 2-0 with a volley shortly afterwards, but missed the target. In the second half, Kisho Yano had a close-range chance for Tochigi, but Kyoto made the game safe with a second goal in the 65th minute. Yohei Toyoda had his pocket picked close to the halfway line. Shinpei Fukuoka was able to slip Tenma Matsuda in behind the Tochigi back four, and then Matsuda crossed for Miyayoshi to nod in a free header at the far post. I think that's three straight wins for Kyoto, who are looking pretty unstoppable at this point. For Iwata, they saw off sadly fast-fading Ryukyu with minimal fuss at the Yamaha Stadium with two second-half goals. Young Ryukyu goalie Kosuke Inose was busy in the first half and made some good saves. The opening goal arrived in the 49th minute, though. Yasuhito Endo's free kick was headed down by Lukian for Yuto Suzuki to bundle over the line from close range. And it was 2-0, 13 minutes from full time. Substitute Shota Kaneko crossed into the penalty area for the almost inevitable Lukian to sweep the ball past Inose for his 18th goal of the season. I think we can say hashtag beast mode if people still do that. I don't know, I'm nearly 40. But yeah, four straight defeats now for Ryukyu. Johnny, their season seems to be finally fizzling out. But just looking at the top of the table, Kyoto on 67 points and Iwata a point behind on 66. That keeps them 9 points clear in the automatic promotion places. Johnny, what did you make of these games, and is anybody going to catch these two now? Is the promotion race pretty much done and dusted?
I think, yeah, the 2-0 wins for these two teams is very un-J2 like, as is the kind of battle, if we can call it that, for the promotion spots. You know, 11 games to go. I've already been talking to people about who Kyoto are going to sign for their return to J1 next season. I mean, you look at it like Niigata are 9 points behind Jubilo, Machida, Nagasaki 11 points back. I just don't see any of those teams putting a kind of run together strong enough that's better than either of Kyoto or Jubilo, especially with the kind of quality both of those teams have in their ranks. So yeah, unfortunately, we're not in for a thrilling last day battle for the title. I think, as we talked about in the green room, Ogiwara has been very impressive for Kyoto, but you know, he's on loan from Urawa, who have a gaping hole at left back at the minute, so he might go back there. And I think the only other thing I really had to say about that game is that's Miyayoshi's got 8 goals for the season now for Kyoto, which is kind of, you wouldn't expect him to have done that at the beginning of the year. And then kind of coming on to Jubilo Ryukyu, because I actually watched this game in full. Like you say, it was a pretty comfortable home win. I really wanted to give a shout out to, though, for Ryukyu. I think Kosuke Inose, he looked really competent. If you'd said to someone, like, he had started the season as their third choice goalkeeper, and he was only like a very, very, I think he's 20, 21. He had composure above his years, and I think he looked really good in the face of a kind of Jubilo onslaught. One thing I wanted to kind of ask you about, John, was because we talked about Lukian before, and I don't know if you remember or if you even knew or the listeners knew, like when Lukian first came to Japan, he joined in Jubilo's relegation season 2019. One of his first games was actually away to Gamba Osaka. I was in the stadium and he got sent off after 15 minutes for two yellow cards. The second of which was for booting the ball into the Gamba fans behind the goal. And I say booting the ball into the Gamba fans behind the goal because that's what it looked like he did from where I was at the other end of the stadium. But actually watching the highlights, he was just having such an off night. He was frustrated. And so I went to kick the ball into the ground and it flew off into the fans behind the goal to inevitable boos. But I sort of thought then he's not going to last very long, is he? But yeah, he's been so composed this season, just the way he occupies defenders. And, you know, now I guess going up with Jubilo, I think Jubilo will be able to keep hold of him, but there must be a fair few teams, Gamba included, who would look at him as a very good signing in J1 next year. What do you think about that, John?
Yeah, I think that's a pretty good shout. And to be honest, I was texting with Sean Carroll earlier tonight, and we were kind of saying that in general, even though Kyoto and Iwata are clearly the two best teams in the division this year, they haven't really blown anybody's socks off, I don't think, in terms of performances. Kyoto very controlled in the way that they play under Chokuji, and I think it's pretty similar for Iwata. I mean, both of these two games, they perhaps could have, you know, really put their foot down and scored more goals. But they just, Kyoto and Iwata just don't play that way, I don't think. On Lukian, yeah, I think he's a really good example of a player just kind of, you know, going hard rather than going home, if we can be glib about it. I mean, I thought he looked fairly lightweight when he first signed physically, for one thing, but you couldn't make that claim about him now. He's obviously put in the hours in the gym, for one thing, and his touch is good, his awareness is good, and his confidence is way up. Obviously, it's interesting that you mentioned the kind of petulant side, because we've not really seen that this season, I don't think. Probably because pretty much everything his touch just turned to gold, so maybe there's no reason to lose his temper. But I think, yeah, maybe it's interesting to hear you say you're kind of looking at who these teams are going to sign next season, you know, in J1, because obviously as a keen J2 watcher, I'm sort of looking at the bench and the players that are making the squad and trying to figure out where they're going to end up in J2 or J3 next year. So I think on Iwata, I mean, we mentioned him before, but, you know, Koki Ogawa, who was the sort of the next big thing a couple of years ago. I mean, there must be young Iwata fans now, you know, 6 or 7 years who don't remember him or don't know what he looks like, because he only gets a very rare sort of cameo now off the bench, because there's Lukian and others keeping him out of the team. So, I happen to think Koki Ogawa is a really good player, although he's had a pretty rough season or two. And I think you have to be good. Lukian must be good to be keeping him, you know, restricting him to so few minutes off the bench. Yeah, you didn't ask me about him, but I think Ryunosuke Noda, you know, at Kyoto is another good example of a player who, you know, he's behind his Ismaila now in the pecking order in terms of forward. So I'm sure he'll end up somewhere in J2 next year. But yeah, Lukian, Iwata, not a one-man team by any stretch of the imagination, but goodness me, he's just unstoppable, isn't he, this year? Nobody seems to be able to control him. So, yeah, okay, well, that's the promotion race taken care of, John. Thanks. thanks for that. Yeah, we can cut and paste that for the next 10 weeks, I suppose, and save us all some time. But, yeah, you mentioned that teams kind of in the chasing pack aren't going to have enough consistency to kind of put Iwata and Kyoto under any real pressure. So we'll talk about the chasing pack a little bit now, if that's all right. In third place in the table are Niigata. They made it back-to-back wins by beating Kofu 1-0 at home, thanks to a last-minute goal from Romero Frank. A cagey first half in this game ended 0-0, and Niigata turned the screw a little bit in the second period. Kofu's keeper Kohei Kawata had to make good saves from Koji Suzuki and Yoshiaki Takagi, and it looked like this game was going to end in a 0-0 draw, but just as the game entered stoppage time, Niigata broke the deadlock. Yuzuru Shimada's chip ball into the penalty area dropped just nicely for Romero Frank to volley in from close range. So as mentioned, that leaves Niigata 9 points off the promotion places, and Kofu are a further 3 points back in 6th place. We'll mention the 4th place team as well, Johnny. It's Machida. They're up to 4th after winning for the 4th time in 5 matches. This time it was away at Tokyo Verdy in the so-called Tokyo Classic. Machida winning 1-0, and Taiki Hirato scored the all-important goal. I think he must enjoy playing at Ajinomoto. I think he scored the winner for Machida away at Verdi last year as well. Pretty drab game, if we're honest, I think, Johnny. But 2 minutes into the second half, great wing play from Shusuke Ota out on the Machida right. Saw him pick out his captain Hirato around the penalty spot, and he sent a thumping drive into the roof of the net past a startled-looking Takahiro Shibasaki. I noticed that Mateus wasn't in the matchday squad, the regular goalkeeper, whether that was a punishment for his, shall we say, poor footwork in the previous game when he gave away a goal against Niigata. But yeah, it was Takahiro Shibasaki. I don't think any goalkeeper was getting near that shot from Hirato, though it was an excellent goal. And yeah, Machida are 11 points off the promotion places in fourth. Johnny, what do you think? Niigata 1, Kofu 0. Tokyo Verdy 0, Machida 1. Niigata and Machida have left it a bit late, haven't they, to challenge the top two this season?
Yeah, I think I'll start with Machida, if that's all right, because I had a few stats about them and then a question for you about Niigata. I think Machida's biggest problem is that at no point this season have they won more than three games in a row. And at the moment, they're in a run of five unbeaten in total, which matches their best run of the season. They've always kind of come up against Akita Kyushu or a side down the bottom that they've dropped points against. And I think, you know, they're 11 points off the pace. I think they lost home and away to Akita Kyushu, didn't they? Imagine they'd won those two games. They'd be right in with a chance. But yeah, I mean, a couple of the players I wanted to give a shout out to. First of all, like Ota, you mentioned, because just looking at my stats from the bench alone this season, Ota has scored 6 goals and assisted 3 times. And I haven't checked anyone else in J2's stats, but I can't imagine anyone gets close to those kind of numbers just off the bench. And then another player that I think he's mentioned more, but he's not really been discussed, is Kaina Yoshio, the right winger on loan from Marinos. And yeah, he's got 7 goals and 8 assists. He never really stands out enough to merit a discussion. But I think Stuart was mentioned last week about Obi, the Tochigi goalkeeper. And I think Yoshio and also Kota Yamada at Yamagata, we might talk about later, they all kind of fit the same track of, I think there's many more likely scenarios than them ending up back at the same team next season, most likely being somewhere in J1, either Marinos or elsewhere. But I think, yeah, Machida are a good team. Hopefully it doesn't get kind of disassembled too much over the winter, and they can have a good push at promotion next year. Then kind of coming on to Niigata, Kofu, I think, like you mentioned, Kofu didn't really create an awful lot. And I think this is the game where they really felt the loss of, like, Jin Nuzumisawa. I think William Lira had stepped up in previous games, but he didn't really do much here. And whether Niigata really deserved the win is up for debate. But yeah, I can't really say Kofu deserved more than the 0 goals they got. What I did want to ask you about, John, was because we're comparing like Niigata versus Kyoto and Iwata. So clearly Niigata are third in the league after 31 games. They're a good team, but they're well off the pace of the top two. What I noticed, and I know you watched FC Tokyo the other week, because I watched the first half of this game, Niigata Kofu, then did my actual job, and then watched the second half of Tokyo Urawa. I think Niigata and Tokyo share the same issue of their attack relies too much on individual brilliance rather than actual structure. I think Niigata knocked the ball along the back quite nicely and into that middle two. But once it goes to that front four, like one of two things generally happen. Either one of the wide players, usually Homma, will put his head down, run and cut in and have a shot, or they'll try and play really fast 1-2s with Takagi. And I think at the start of the season that worked, and they'd get a goal in front, and then with that pace out wide, they would just cut teams apart on the counter. Because Niigata are not a team you want to be 1-0 down to with like 60 or 70 minutes to go. But as time's gone on, I think smart teams like Kofu just put 5 at the back and stifled that, put players in high percentage positions to cut off those Homma shots or kind of stifle Takagi. So that's my kind of working theory as to where it may have gone wrong for Niigata. Do you have any thoughts on that?
I think there's definitely a sense, certainly in my head, I don't know if this is borne out by stats or analysis, because I haven't really dug deep into it, but I think that there's such a big drop off between what they were producing in the first sort of 2 or 3 months of the season to now in terms of, you know, chances and goals. That, yeah, I think there's something in that. One thing that might be related, I'll just throw this out off the top of my head, is I know that the coach, Alberto Puig, is a big Barcelona fan, isn't he? And if you follow him on Twitter like I do, you're sort of desperately looking for, team news or any hints of where he might be next season if he's staying at Niigata. And it's either a picture of him promoting something Niigata-related, in his sort of PR duties, or it'll be retweeting like when Barcelona have won. I think Ansu Fati's back from injury. He was tweeting about that. You know, obviously. So I wonder if there's a sense of like, you know, the Barcelona way of playing does kind of match a little bit what you were alluding to there. Of like the defense is well organized and everybody has a role, but after you get past the sort of two holding midfielders, the front players tend to be interchangeable pretty much, right? They're basically sort of told to just go and play and create chances. Yeah. And I wonder if that worked really well early on in the season at Niigata, as you said, but you can't. It's very difficult. It's much easier for, you know, your Messis to sustain that kind of, you know, they don't really need to be told what to do, you know, with the ball, do they? Whereas I think at Niigata, it's too much to ask Shion Honma, good as he is, Yoshiaki Takagi, good as he is, just go and create chances now, and then we'll score some goals. Yeah. I think perhaps they could benefit from. It's funny to be talking about this because you kind of normally Japanese teams players we're complaining that they're too rigid and too structured. Whereas I think it's interesting, isn't it? If you think about Niigata's goals, how many of them have come from really, really good, like what you're talking about, like interplay between players in this kind of front five or front six. And you have to say over the last 4 or 5 months, it's not that many. You know, case in point, the goal that won this game was a kind of pretty hopeful ball into the box, wasn't it, in the last minute, that ended up dropping by chance. It happened to drop to a Niigata player and end up in the back of the net. So I'm not sure I've answered your question. I've certainly rambled for long enough on it, but yeah, I think this was an important win for Niigata in the sense that I think promotion looks tough now because of how many points they are behind Kyoto and Iwata. But I think Carlos Alberto Puig, he needs some validation of his methods, I think, to take into next season if he's still going to be there, because it's going to be harder next year with four teams coming down from J1 and all the rest of it. I mean, I'm pretty sure Shion Honma's going to leave, you know, for one thing as well. So I think he really needs as many points in the bag as he can to point to the fact that the team is making progress with him. But having said that, I did just look back. I think they finished 11th last year, right? So perhaps if you compare year on year, they have made a big, pretty big improvement. So I'm just kind of, you know, thinking, is it a disappointing season or a positive one for them at the moment? I suppose we won't know until the final whistle in round 42. But I think something that I never felt in the first 2 or 3 months, but I do feel quite often now, is Niigata making quite heavy weather of attacking sometimes.
Yeah.
And that's definitely something to keep an eye on. On Machida real quick, and I think it's good to shout out Kaina Yoshio because he's been excellent. I've been trying to keep him quiet, you know, in the hopes that he'll be back in J2 somewhere, maybe even at Machida next year. But I think Yokohama Marinos, they really are kind of copying Manchester City and having just really, really good players on loan everywhere, aren't they? Hogging all these good players. So long may it continue. I think that Machida midfield is one of the most attractive to watch, I think, in the division. So I hope they can replicate that for next year. Johnny, if you're okay, we'll talk about some more entertaining football. Before we take a quick break, there were high-scoring away wins for the teams in 5th and 7th place in the table. Nagasaki in 5th cruised to victory away at Yamaguchi, winning 3-1 in the end. Nagasaki, the only word to describe them is rampant, really, in this match from kickoff. Daisuke Yoshimitsu's goal was under threat from Takumi Nagara and Takashi Sawada early on, and Yoshimitsu, the Yamaguchi keeper, had to make some good saves. Nagasaki went in front in the 15th minute, though. Terrible pass out from the back from Kosuke Kikuchi, gifted possession to Nagasaki. Yamaguchi's defenders did their best to rectify the situation, but in the end, Nagara crossed low for Edgar Junio to convert from close range, Junio scoring for the third consecutive game. And the lead was doubled in ridiculous circumstances, really, about 12 minutes before half-time. Johnny, the new craze sweeping J2 is goalkeepers passing the ball straight to opposition strikers. And in this case, Yamaguchi were messing around with possession at the back, passing the ball around slowly and inviting pressure from Nagasaki. And then the goalkeeper Yoshimitsu got it wrong. He passed the ball straight to Edgar Junio, not the player you want to be passing the ball to. He couldn't believe his luck, of course, and slotted in his second goal of the game from the edge of the penalty area with the net pretty much unguarded. And it was 3-0 on the hour. Rookie Nagasaki midfielder Yuya Kuwasaki scored his first J-League goal with a thumping half volley from about 25 yards. That was a great strike. Yamaguchi skipper Joji Ikegami finished off a decent Yamaguchi attack to pull a goal back, but that was literally the last kick of the game, and the referee blew the full-time whistle before Nagasaki could even kick off. So, Yamaguchi 1, Nagasaki 3, the final score. Over at Ninjinia Stadium, Yamagata mauled Ehime 4-0 with two goals each for Kota Yamada, player we've mentioned already, and Vinicius Araujo. In the 18th minute, Vinicius got free inside Ehime's penalty area and teed up Yamada to fire in the opener. Ehime actually responded pretty well, though. Yamagata goalkeeper Victor saved from Kenta Uchida and Yoshiki Fujimoto. I noticed that Fujimoto's chance was set up very nicely by Shoji Toyama. But Yamagata blew Ehime away with three goals in 11 minutes early in the second half. In the 52nd minute, good play down the right from the impressive Riku Handa led to Shuto Minami pulling the ball back for Yamada to score again. In the 59th minute, Handa was involved yet again. His low cross was tucked away by Vinicius to kill the game off completely. 4 minutes later, Vinicius scored a sumptuous goal. I think this was my favourite of the round. A drag back to send his marker to the shops for a newspaper, and then a beautiful right-footed curler into the top corner. Fantastic goal. Martinez then came on for Yamagata for the last 20 minutes. Not the player you want to see coming on if you're an Ehime defender and you're 4-0 down. He set up a pair of chances for another substitute, Masamichi Hayashi, but neither of them resulted in a goal, and it finished 4-0. We should mention, Johnny, there was no Naoki Kuriyama at centre-back for Ehime in this match. I think he's on loan from Yamagata. So he couldn't play, but I'm not sure how much he could have helped anyway in the end. Nagasaki have 55 points. That's the same as Machida. And Yamagata, for all their goals and exciting football, they're 14 points adrift of the promotion places. Now, Johnny, what to make of these games? Yamaguchi 1, Nagasaki 3, Ehime 0, Yamagata 4. If only they could have produced these kind of performances bit earlier on in the season, Nagasaki and Yamagata could have been right up there, couldn't they?
Yeah. If I can start with the Yamagata game, and then I've got a question for you about Nagasaki. It's interesting you mentioned like Naoki Kuriyama being out because of his loan deal, and that was at the top of my notes, because obviously it's overly simplistic to say that they lost 4-0 because one player was missing, but I think he has helped to an extent at the back for Ehime. But yeah, it's because as good as the Yamagata attacking was, I think Ehime were rather all over the place at the back, and it's not nice to single out one player, but I think Naoki Otani, I think he's on loan from Machida, he seemed to particularly have a rough ride against Vinicius Araujo, and that's Vinicius has now got, he's obviously had his injury problems. He scored 7 goals and 3 assists in 15 games this season. So you mentioned like if Yamagata had been able to put these performances in earlier in the year, if Vinicius Araujo had not been injured earlier in the year, that would definitely have helped them. Yeah, because I mean Yamagata, even after that long run of good results, then they've lost 4 of their last 6, including this game. So a bit like Marinos, who obviously the style they're trying to imitate with Klimovsky, it seems like at Marinos, when things go well, it's beautiful, but when things don't go well, the wheels can come off. So they're definitely going to be a team to watch like towards the end of this season and also next season. And then kind of looking at Yamaguchi and Nagasaki, I think Yamaguchi, they're skirting the outskirts of the relegation zone, but I don't worry about them too much because you can't really say they're out of form because they've never really been in form this season. Because looking through the results, they've never had more than 2 of the same result in a row, like no more than 2 wins, 2 draws or 2 losses. I think they had a kind of run in the middle of the year with like 8 games without a win, but there was a lot of draws in there. But they have now lost twice in a row, and I think the next game is Verdy, which is quite a crucial game. If they're to get into a bit of a rut now, they might have some trouble with teams below them kind of coming good. With Nagasaki, I think that the word I wrote down about Kuwasaki's goal, and maybe fans of old school Alan Partridge might remember the word thriker, which I think he said commenting in the 1990 World Cup. What I wanted to ask you, John, with like Edgar Junior coming into good form and say a Maikuma, he's setting up a lot, get Nagura back. I feel like if I was a betting man, and I'm not, that I would say Nagasaki are probably the favourites to finish third in my book. Am I sort of jumping the gun, or what do you think about that?
I think that's a really interesting question because it is kind of a logjam of teams who it's difficult to pick between. This is why, as usual, it's a shame that we don't have playoffs to, you know, decide who really is the best the best team from third to sixth. But yeah, I think Nagasaki, they've become a very difficult team to play against. I think I don't think they have a lot of weaknesses right now. Yeah, Edgar Junior, I mean, when he signed for Nagasaki, that was considered, you know, the sort of J2 cheat code. And they were going to sweep all before them. And it's kind of this, I think this is the kind of performance, and the performances in particular he's been having recently, is kind of what we expected from him, you know, earlier on in the season, isn't it, as well? So yeah, I do think at the moment they look like a pretty good shout. I think Niigata are not looking as smooth. Machida look good in patches, I think, but I still think, like you said, they have that problem of they can't always stitch together a good 90 minutes. I think they often have a good half or a good spell in a game without truly convincing. So I think Nagasaki, yes, I think they could finish third. That would make it two seasons finishing third in a row. So that kind of perhaps is unlikely, just statistically speaking. But yes, I think at the moment they're a very good team to watch, and they're very difficult, I think, to play against, because you mentioned they have a lot of pace and ability on both wings. And I think because the ball is spending so much time either on those flanks or up at the front with Edgar Junior, where they have been a little bit exposed, I think maybe at centre back and centre midfield, where Aquino's been injured, has been a big miss, obviously. That is not as apparent now as perhaps it was earlier in the season. And I think, yeah, Caio Cesar, I suppose he was out injured for this game. Out suspended for this game after his red card in this round. I didn't actually check, but I think he's been back to his best, actually. He struggled a lot at the start of the season, along with the rest of the team. But I think, yes, I mean, I'm not a betting man either, but I wouldn't bet against you, if that makes sense. I think that's a pretty good shout for Nagasaki being third. And I actually think, yeah, next season, if we assume that promotion isn't on the agenda this year because of the points difference with the top two, next year could be very interesting. And will we see Victory Barbo again? That's the other thing. We you know, I keep forgetting he's there, but I know he's still around somewhere. Okay, Johnny, I think we wrapped up the top third of the table pretty nicely. If you're okay, we'll take a short break, and when we come back, let's talk relegation zone. Welcome back, everyone. We're going to talk now about the scary bottom half of the J2 league table. We're going to talk about the relegation zone, Johnny. I think we'll start from the bottom and work our way up. It's Ehime, who are rock bottom. We mentioned they were soundly beaten 4-0 by Yamagata at the weekend. And it's Kanazawa now, who are second bottom, 2 points better off than Ehime. But Kanazawa's winless streak is now at 13 matches after they lost 2-1 away at Mito. An exciting game, I thought, based on the highlights. Shion Niwa had an early chance blocked for Kanazawa, but Mito took the lead 5 minutes before half-time. Ryotaro Ito was felled by a clumsy tackle from Honeya Shoji inside the penalty area, and he stepped up to dispatch the spot kick himself. And there was a lucky escape for Kanazawa right at the start of the second half. Mito nearly doubled their lead when Mizuki Ando's shot came back off the base of the post. Kanazawa equalised just before the hour. A corner was only cleared to the right side of the Mito penalty area, and a cross from Yuhei Oishi was met with a thumping Shoji header to make it 1-1. So he was able to make amends for giving away that penalty quite quickly. And then the visitors hit the frame of the goal. Mito keeper Ayumi Niekawa spilled across at the feet of Hayato Otani, but recovered well to tip the Kanazawa striker's effort against the post. And then Towa Yamane, who spent last season on loan at Kanazawa from Seretse Osaka, he came on as a sub for Mito and made quite a big impact. He shot wide of the far post when he was clean through, perhaps should have done better, but he did hurt his old side Kanazawa right at the death. He's through pass to another substitute, and another Seretse Osaka loanee, funnily enough, Shota Fujio, allowed Fujio to chip the advancing Kanazawa keeper Masaki Goto and make it 2-1. So yes, that's how the game finished. Kanazawa's last chance for a point was a header from Riku Matsuda that cleared the crossbar. It's Sagamihara in third bottom. They're level on points with Kanazawa. This is after losing their big relegation six-pointer with Omiya 1-0 at the NAC 5 stadium. I think both sides had their chances in this game, Johnny Sagamihara's keyman, Jungo Fujimoto, cleared brilliantly off the line from a Keisuke Nishimura header in the first half. We're used to seeing Fujimoto being decisive at the other end of the pitch, aren't we? It was quite surprising to see him as the last man inside the goalpost for Sagamihara on that occasion. At the other end, Yuta Minami was in good form in the Omiya goal. He kept out a free kick from Fujimoto as a normal service was resumed for him. And Minami also made an important double save at the start of the second half as well. The goal that won it for Omiya was an absolute cracker in the 77th minute. One of the goals of the weekend, a sizzling free kick from about 25 yards from Kazuaki Mawatari. Fantastic goal, and worthy of winning any game, really. And Omiya in 17th at the moment, just a point clear of the drop zone, but obviously an absolutely vital 3 points for them. Johnny, what are we to make of this relegation chaos? It finished Mito 2, Kanazawa 1, and Omiya 1, Sagamihara 0.
Well, I'll start with the Omiya game, because that's Omiya now. They've taken 10 points from the last five games. And I know Mike Innes in his J3 short corner always talks about 2 points per game. Well, Omiya have hit that target, albeit in a very small space of time. So if they can keep going the way they're going, that they're obviously going to push on a bit. And this was really a non-negotiable, had to be won game. Because I think when I made my debut on here, they lost the reverse fixture to Sagamihara. They conceded two goals right at the end, so they really needed to get revenge here. One point I did note is that, on TV anyway, the pitch at the NAC 5 looks in very good condition, especially when you compare it to, like, for example, Kyoto or in J1 Kashima. So it seems to make for them playing some decent stuff. And like you said, that Mawatari free kick is a good enough goal to win any game. Maybe some questions from a Sagamihara perspective about the positioning of the wall, because it seemed to go through between two players' heads. But yeah, I think Omiya, again, I'm not a betting man. At the moment, they do seem to have turned the corner. And I think Atsushi Kawata's helped a lot up front. And like you mentioned, Minami made a couple of saves and maybe just added a bit of calmness at the back. It seems like they have used the summer transfer window to add a bit of quality. I know we kind of slightly disagree about Sagamihara because you're cautious of writing them off. I can still see them escaping, but I just have the feeling with teams around them winning, I could see them just getting lost in the shovel at the end, maybe final day or something like that. And then coming on to the Mito Kanazawa game, because I mentioned like teams like Yamaguchi have never been in form, so they can never be out of form, whereas Kanazawa have just fallen like a stone. And looking at them on paper, I don't see the players they have as being particularly any worse than anyone else from 12th down. But the fact they've fallen so hard, so fast, it's such a nosedive. I don't know. I think Kanazawa Dreaming could probably do a better job of analysing it than me, but it's difficult to see them pulling out of it now, even though J2 does always have a kind of sting in the tail. But maybe to kind of switch this slightly away from relegation to more mid-table, Mito, because obviously they get raided quite badly in the summer, like by Yuichi Hirano going to Urawa, and Jelani Sumiyoshi going to Hiroshima, and obviously Koyanagisawa going to Gamba. I wonder if that might actually help them going forward, in that most of the decent players that have already been taken away, so they might not be rated quite as badly in the winter. But one person I think might be the subject of admiring glances from elsewhere is the coach, Tadahiro Akiba. What do you think, John? Do you think he's the most likely departure from Mito to a higher place? Or what do you think about him?
I really like the playing style, and I think he has earned the chance to work at a bigger club. And I think, based on our conversations, you know, in the green, there's quite a lot of J1 teams that'll be looking for fresh inspiration next season. Might be fair to say. So I think he's a very shrewd manager, and I think he has a system. He has a way that he likes to play, which the players obviously enjoy. And I think he's crafted a kind of environment where, and I'll try and phrase this as carefully as I can so I make it clear, but I think the actual individual players are not that important versus the system that players can sort of just come in and quickly get acclimatized to and then contribute. If you contrast that with Niigata, for example, where the individual players are asked to do sort of individual player things, whereas at Mito it's more like there is a system and players are identified that can come in and fit the system, and then when they come in, they can integrate, you know, quite quickly. I mean, it's unbelievable how well they've done since losing all those players in the summer window, and I think that might be another string to Akiba's bow, if you like, that I think he probably knew. If you're the manager of Mito, you know that you're going to lose players quite regularly, and he's almost, you know, the replacements are kind of ready and can come in, and it hasn't really made any difference to the results. They've been remarkably consistent by Mito standards, I would say, by which I mean they could lose 3-0 one week and win 3-0 the following week. So just to go back to kind of conversations I've had with other sort of J2 watchers this season, I think by J2 standards, it hasn't been dull. It is too harsh on this season. I don't think it's been dull, but it certainly hasn't hit the heights in terms of exciting attacking football that other seasons have in the past. And I think Mito and Yamagata would be kind of the outliers. And I think for Mito to have done it with the size of the club that it is and the budget that has, I mean, that is a huge feather in Akiba's cap, I think, especially because he was pretty unknown and nothing much was expected from him when he took the job. So yeah, if I throw it back to you, where would be a likely, let's assume he does get the call to go up to J1 for next year, where would be a likely destination? Which club is happy to win 3-0 one week and lose 3-0 the next and just have a good time along the way?
It's quite interesting because I think, as I mentioned last week, I was at the Gamba Kashiwa game, and you've got two well, inverted commas big teams, or probably just big teams without the inverted commas, with who are probably going to be under new management next season. I think Akiba for Kashiwa, for me, I think that would be quite. I think he would do a much better job than Nelsinho is doing. And I keep having to apologise to Kashiwa supporters, because any time I'm on Big Pod, I'm slagging them off. And I don't mean it in any way against Kashiwa. It's just there's so much potential there, and it's just not being realised. I think with the youth development that goes on at Kashiwa, and having, like, you've got Yutsu Keizai, the high school, and the Funabashi Ichiritsu high school there. There's so much talent in that area. You'd think, Akiba would be able to do something with it. And obviously his predecessor at Mito has gone on to do so well with Fukuoka. You would think, and he's worked with the JFA. Yeah, I think Kashiwa or another big club, I think he's ready for the step up, I'd say.
I think it's definitely worth giving him a chance. I mean, I'm getting old now, so I'm less bothered about the results compared to when I was in my sort of in my teens, in my 20s. And I think Mito players look like they're having a great time playing for him, and fans look like they're having a great time watching. So I think surely that's enough for one, you know, team higher up, maybe in J2 or J1 to maybe give him a call and see what he'd like to do with more resources, more money. Yeah, I think that's a good shout. And I, to be honest, I agree with you about Kanazawa. I hope they can get out of it for James's sake.
Yeah.
But it's not, you know, momentum seems to be against them at the moment. There's a small matter of a home game against Niigata coming up at the weekend, which I don't know how he's feeling. How James is feeling about that. For Sagamihara, it was kind of back to their, wasn't quite back to their old ways in terms of performance, because they were still a lot more on the front foot than they had been before Takuya Takagi took over, but they struggled to create chances really in this game. And I think once they went a goal down, it was, you know, there was 30 minutes to go, and it's hard for them to respond. You know, they're a low scoring team, and that means the first goal is always going to be extremely important in games, isn't it? So they might get out of it. It's still all to play for, but definitely losing Tomi is a big setback. Talking about big setbacks, Johnny, I think we better get on to the sort of what will be the match of the day, but for some of the wrong reasons. At the SunPro Alwyn Stadium, which I can't get used to adding SunPro to the name of the stadium, Matsumoto came from behind to beat their visitors Kita Kyushu 2-1, a result which means they switch places in the table. Matsumoto move out of the relegation zone, level on points with Omiya, 30 points, and Kita Kyushu drop back into the bottom four on 29. Early on in this game, Sho Ito missed a great chance for the home side, and then Kita Kyushu took the lead in nonsensical circumstances, really, midway through the half. Taiga Maekawa was the scorer. Matsumoto goalkeeper Tomohiko Maruyama took what can only be described as a very heavy touch inside his own six-yard box. He was under no pressure at all, so I'm not sure how that happened. Maekawa dispossessed him and then rolled the ball into the empty net. A huge goal for Kita Kyushu. And then the controversy that we're probably going to spend too long talking about and bore all the listeners, Johnny, in the 37th minute, Maekawa scored again. He tucked in a rebound after Maruyama had fumbled a shot from close range. But the goal was disallowed. The assistant referee flagged for offside initially, but then after a conversation with the referee, the goal was disallowed and a penalty was given to Kita Kyushu, ostensibly because Matsumoto defender Yuya Hashiuchi was adjudged to have handled the ball in the build-up, which you know, the replay showed his arm, it was his shoulder, and his arms were against his body. So that's we're going to have to unpack this in stages, I think, Johnny. But a penalty was given for handball. It was left to a player who hasn't exactly been brimming with confidence all season, Ryo Sato, and he crashed that against the crossbar. So yeah, Kita Kyushu had gone 2-0 up and had the goal taken away. They went in 1-0 up at half time. And then there was a kind of sad inevitability about what happened in the second half after this incident. Matsumoto equalised 7 minutes into the second period. A right wing free kick dropped just right for, who else could it be? The man of the moment, Hashiuchi, and he rifled it into the roof of the net for 1-1. An absolutely stonking finish. I'm not really sure where, didn't know who he was capable of that. But yeah, fantastic goal for 1-1. Kita Kyushu looked a bit shell-shocked at this point, and Matsumoto went in front just about on the hour mark when a raking long ball was knocked down by Itsuki Enomoto right into the path of Sho Ito, who was running on, and he coolly placed the ball outside the goalkeeper's reach but inside the post, and it finished, yeah, Matsumoto 2, Kita Kyushu 1. Matsumoto's first win in 7 and Kita Kyushu's first defeat in 7. So, yeah, kind of a weird balance this game. Johnny, I've been feeding you matches two at a time to keep you satisfied, but this one deserves to be put on a pedestal for your analysis. So what on earth happened here? Matsumoto 2, Kita Kyushu 1.
Well, I think we decided in the green room that this incident in the game could probably be worthy of its own podcast on its own. And I think probably, like, the long story short, that the two of us, despite watching multiple replays and different channels and you watching judge replay, we still can't come up with a logical explanation as to why the referee and his assistant have come to the conclusion they have. There's just so much wrong with it, like you said, that the wrongful handball against Hashiuchi, the fact Maekawa was tapped in at a fair goal, that the attacking team have done nothing wrong, but they've been punished by essentially a tap-in from the six-yard box to then a penalty, which is further back. And yeah, again, like we said earlier in our chat in the green room, this is actually the second time this has happened to Kita Kyushu this season. The first time happened, like, in less, like, tight circumstances. Are already 3-0 down to Ryukyu, but I think a shot was hit off Yong Jik and then fell, and as the Kita Kyushu player struck the ball, the referee blew his whistle. And I believe, because you mentioned Sato not being in great form or confidence, he missed his penalty. The first choice penalty taker was Daigo Takahashi, and he missed against Ryukyu, which may kind of explain why Sato took this one. But yeah, we also were kind of talking earlier that the lack of anger, for want of a better phrase, from Kita Kyushu, there's a bit of a protest, but if it happened in another league, I think there might have been more vociferous claims. And I hope maybe they can stay as calm as they were then going forward and not let this ruin their season. Because, yeah, like we say, they're 29 points, 19th, Yamaga 30 points, 18th. That was a big call to get wrong for the officials. So what's your take, John?
Yeah, I think, I mean, like you said, I bored you. I've already given you 40 minutes of my views on this before we press record, so I'll try and keep it brief. But to be as succinct as possible, the way I see that as a fan is that the attacking team has done absolutely nothing wrong and scored a goal, and the defending team has also done nothing wrong in my view, but penalty's been given against them. I don't understand why you can't play the advantage and just give the attacking team the goal that they've legitimately scored. Like, who cares if a defender's handled the ball in the build-up? They scored a goal, you know. Yeah. It doesn't make any sense. And it's very hard for me to square this idea I've got in my head that the attacking team's been punished and the defending team has, you know, centre-backs handled, has been adjudged to have handled the ball in the box, and they've been rewarded for that by having the chance to escape going 2-0 down. And to be honest, the neutral in me thinks that would have been a much more interesting game if it had been 2-0 to Kitakyushu after 38 minutes. But yeah, it's just, you know, something we talked about before. You know, we're fans, and I've never sat down and read the laws of the game from cover to cover. But I know what feels right and what looks right in a football match, and that just felt like a real injustice. I mean, what would have happened if, let's say, that the attacking player gone round the goalkeeper and shot at the empty net, and a defender handled the ball on the line, but it went in? Do you then stop the game, send off the defender and award a penalty? Or do you play advantage and let the team have the goal? I mean, surely you allow the goal, don't you? I don't know. Yeah, you know, we should trot out the usual, you know, refereeing's a hard job and I wouldn't want to do it. But, I mean, it just seemed to me that the match officials there have contrived to make a massive talking point out of just a total non-issue. Tiger Mayakawa was not offside, and it wasn't a handball by Yu Hashichi, so I just don't understand what. Well, it really is like it's sort of mistake upon top on top of mistake, and I think the icing on the cake for me was watching the closest thing we get to a sort of match of the day style program for J2, which is the judge replay show on DAZN, and their conclusion after about 12 minutes of debate was, well, if there was VAR, the penalty, you know, the goal would have been allowed. Yeah. So pretty obvious the wrong conclusions were reached. And I'd be interested to know what if Kitakyushu are going to make any kind of complaint or you know, write a strongly worded letter to the J League about that. Because if that were my team, you know, it's a sort of thing that you mentioned they've already been involved in a similar circumstance this season. You know, they might go down by 2 points or a point.
A goal difference,
and then it becomes a really sticky situation, doesn't it? But yeah, I think we probably should say well done to Matsumoto. They've been looking absolutely terrible for the last couple of months. So it'd be interesting to see if they can build on getting a result, a win that they, not sure if they did deserve, but they got the 3 points. It's kind of all that matters at this stage, isn't it?
I think Tony Pulis would approve of especially that second Matsumoto goal. It was very, very Route 1. But yeah.
Yeah, I think that's true. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, Kitakyushu are normally weak on the crosses from the flanks, aren't they? But not the one long ball down the middle, which did for them there. Yeah, I think we've reached the point stage of the season. You know, Johnny, 11 games to go. Teams are just going to do whatever it takes, aren't they, to try and get the points? But yeah, I think, to be honest, for the bottom of the league table, Matsumoto winning that game might be a good thing, which makes it even more exciting, opens it up even more. But yeah, circumstances of that game were... It was madness. It was madness, wasn't it?
It leaves a bit of a bad taste in the mouth, I think.
Yeah, it's not often that I have to... I think I had to watch it. I watched it back a few times to try and work out what happened. And then I had to like go away for a think and then come back and watch it again. Because I was like, I'm not really, I don't know if I'm in the right frame of mind to assess this. Yeah, I think just finally I'll mention something that I said to you in the first place, which there may well be some technical reason, you know, why the referee's done what he's done. But I think to any regular fan watching the game, it's not clear and it seems wrong. And I think if it seems wrong to 99.9% of the supporters, it kind of almost doesn't matter if it was the correct thing to do. I think you have to do, you know, the game is to be enjoyed by fans, and you're kind of spoiling it if you're making decisions that fans can't understand or rationalise. I think this has been an issue with VAR, hasn't it, where fans in the stadium don't get to see the replay. They don't get to see what the referee sees in the initial stages of that being implemented. So, I think we're in something similar situation here where, you know, you paid money to watch a game and you just can't understand what on earth is happening. So, yeah, perhaps we can wheel out other guests to give their views on that decision in the coming weeks. Yeah, I hope we don't have any similar incidents next weekend. I might flip my lid if I have to see any more nonsense penalties. All right, Johnny, I think at this point we'll just take a check on the bottom of J2, so it is confusing, so this helps me as much as it helps the listeners. So at the bottom, from bottom up, it's Ehime on 26 points, then Kanazawa 28, Sagamihara 28, and Kitakyushu on 29. So that's the four teams in the relegation zone, and just above that, Matsumoto on 30, Omiya on 30, Gunma on 32, Yamaguchi also on 32, and Tochigi on 33. So we'll round up the last two games from the weekend. Johnny Gunma not looking too clever at the moment. They're in 16th. As I mentioned, 2 points better off than Omiya and Matsumoto. But Gunma lost for the third time in four games at the weekend. 1-0 at home to Jeff Chiba, thanks to a late goal from Issei Takahashi. Jeff very much on top in this one, based on the highlights that I saw. Solomon Sakuragawa went close with a couple of headers, and Takagi Fukumitsu had a pretty dodgy penalty appeal turned down, I think, correctly. Taishi Taguchi went close for the visitors as well. It looked like Gunma were going to hold on for a precious point, but 5 minutes from time, their goalkeeper Keiki Shimizu made a bit of a mess of punching away Fukumitsu's right wing cross, and the ball fell invitingly for Takahashi to drill the ball into the back of the net from just inside the penalty area. I think Takahashi had only just come on as a substitute as well, so I think he was delighted to get an early chance, to get a feel for the ball by drilling it into the back of the net. Yeah, so this game finished Gunma 0, Jeff Chiba 1. Just quick transfer news, Johnny. Hajime Hosogai has come in at Gunma, hasn't he? He's joined from Bangkok United. It seems a bit of a strange transfer for a 35-year-old, but we established he was born in Maebashi in Gunma, so that might explain the reasons for him going back there for the rest of the season, age 35. But it'll be interesting to see how much he plays or how much influence he has on Gunma between now and the end of the season. And we'll mention the last game on the slate, Johnny, before I come back to you. Akita looked like they were going to pick up all 3 points from their game away at Okayama, but they conceded a 95th minute equaliser in a 1-1 draw. Akita went in front thanks to an absolutely superb strike from Hayate Take. That was in the 14th minute. He lashed the ball in for about 20 yards, and definitely one of the top three goals of the weekend. Okayama went in search of an equaliser, and they got more and more desperate as the game entered the closing stages. Akita goalie Yudai Tanaka made a good block from Mitch Duke, and then Lee Yong-jae wasted a free header when he missed the target for about 6 yards. Kind of good to see him back playing again. I know his injury problem's been pretty well documented this year. It looked like the game was all over, but then in the 95th minute, and with Okayama's goalie Togo Umeda up in the Akita penalty area as an extra attacker for a corner, a cross came in from left from Takaya Kimura. Tanaka unfortunately fumbled it, and then Takashi Abe reacted quickest and fired the ball into the net to make it 1-1. So it finished Okayama 1, Akita 1, and that leaves Okayama 8 points clear of the relegation zone, and Akita 10 points clear. Johnny, for me, Okayama and Akita are both going to be fine in terms of relegation worries, but what about them, and what about Gunma? Form's not been that good in the last month or so.
Yeah, I'll start with the Gunma, Jeff. I think Gunma, like, because they've been missing Tanaka and Genki Omai for the past few weeks, and initially they started out all right. I think they're really starting to miss those two, who I've noticed they've been back on the bench the past couple of weeks. So if they can get them back integrated, they might have just about enough. But I do notice that the back they've brought in is Shun Obu from Jubilo, and the left back, Masaya Kojima, is back from injury. I think he had a bad knee injury, so they look a bit tighter at the back. A couple of interesting, or maybe not, things I've noticed about Gunma. They've used two goalkeepers. You mentioned Shimizu and also Matsubara. They've used two goalkeepers this season, but neither of them have played more than 6 consecutive games. And also, when I kind of study like who teams like substitute off, it's very rare for teams to substitute defenders, especially centre-backs. But Gunma didn't do it in this game, but they regularly take off like 2 or 3 of their defenders. And I think it's a comment Stuart made maybe last season about things that don't happen at successful clubs. It's almost as if Gunma are like self-sabotaging themselves at the back at times. But yeah, it seemed a bit like in this game against Jeff, it was like Sakuragawa against Shimizu was the lone battle. And probably worryingly, I just saw the highlights too. It seemed like Jeff dominated. And yeah, Yun Jung Hwan's maybe his greatest achievement at Jeff is making him boring. Because, I mean, apart from the inevitable like home and away 1-0 losses to Sagamihara, they've basically performed as you'd expect a team sitting in 10th in the league to do. Like, they've won 1-0 against Ehime and now Gunma in the last two games. And Jeff would have probably found a way to lose this game last season, but they've done all right this year. So, I mean, any other team you might say, well, he's stopped the bleeding so they can kick on next season for a playoff push. But I'm going to hold back before I kind of predict anything like that for Jeff. And then kind of the second game, Okayama and Akita, had a couple of questions for you about that, because I watched this game in full, and I think Akita, if anything, they maybe scored a bit early, because then they kind of got stuck in a rut in the second half of just playing in the counter, and they looked dangerous a couple of times. But in that last kind of 10, 15 minutes, I think the ball was just pinging around their box a bit too much. And like you said, it was a Tanaka mistake, kind of bumping into his own player. But there was just too many bodies in there. The ball was flying about too many times. That the way Okoyama have played this year, I wouldn't have been surprised if they'd lost that 1-0. But again, Akita, as hard as it is to take, I think 1-1 wasn't an unfair result. But what was quite interesting was, like you mentioned, like Mitch Duke, and I talked about him the last time. I think he's come in for a bit of criticism back in his home country as an international player moving to J2. But he did an interview, I think, last week, and he kind of defended the move. And what he said was that Okayama will be looking to bring in a number of new players to challenge for promotion next year, which obviously runs contrary to, I think Mike said in the preseason preview that they didn't have much money. And, you know, a lot of players have come from Shimizu to Okayama. So it got me thinking, like Akira Silvano de Saro, he sort of sank without a trace at Shimizu. If you were to have Eyong Jae and Mitch Duke, de Saro, Uejo as forwards, surely they could get something kind of sorted out, because they're the second best defence in the league. But yeah, I think these two, they're not like, I mean, they'd have to completely collapse, I think, to be enveloped by the relegation zone. I think in the next 2 or 3 weeks, I think they'll probably find themselves safe. But what do you think of these two, like, safe? And what do you make of those Duke comments, John?
Yeah, I think they're both safe, because even though mathematically they could still get dragged into it, I think they're too good. They're too well organised and too difficult to beat. I think they'll by hook or by crook they'll get enough points to be safe. Interesting comments by Mitch Duke. They do sound a bit like the kind of thing you would tell a player that you wanted to sign for your club, in order to make sure that they they put their name on the dotted line. I think Okayama's an interesting case, because their attendances are pretty good. Or I should say they traditionally are good. I'm not sure about any sort of COVID era. We can't really judge. The stadium situation's not great. I don't think they have a particularly good facility there. Obviously, it's one of these kind of athletic track type bowls. It's very open and too big for them. I don't know if they have any plans to address that in the future. But I think there's definitely potential there for them to be doing a bit better than what they're doing right now. In terms of where they are in the league. And I think a bit more ambition sounds good on paper. I think their recruitment sort of last winter was mainly sort of players fresh out of university, wasn't it? And there wasn't really a lot to get excited about. Though I don't think any of those players have let anybody down when they've played. But it's not kind of the stuff of, you know, top six, you know, top six challenges not built on that kind of transfer business. So yeah, it's going to be very interesting to see to see what happens. I think Mitch Duke's played really well since he's come in. He's definitely added something. I'm not sure about him and Lee Yong Jae playing together. I kind of get the feeling more like perhaps Mitch Duke is the replacement for Lee Yong Jae. Not a comment on the quality of the players, but his Lee Yong Jae's injury record means he just can't really be relied on, I don't think, to play. You just don't know how many games he's going to be able to play. I also think a potential fly in the ointment is, I think Satoki Uejo has probably done enough to turn the heads of at least a newly promoted team or two in J1.
I was having down as Shion Homma's replacement at Niigata. I think he'd fit in quite well there.
He would like some help. I think he's probably had enough of being the only sort of creative outlet in that team. And I think you mentioned Tony Pulis here. I think Okayama definitely got that kind of Tony Pulis vibe. That's 4-4-2 players with names like, you know, Takashi Abe, you know, and Kimura, kind of like very kind of, you know, straight down the middle sort of names. And I noticed that I forget the player's name, but someone got their flowers for playing 400 J2 games all at Okayama.
Paulinho or no?
Nah, he's a Japanese player, but he's, you know, Mr. Okayama, you know, he's been with us since the JFL. And I was like, yeah, I think there is definitely an interesting project that could be had at Okayama, I think. It's not happening right now. And I will watch their transfer business with interest, and we'll either see a very happy Mitch Duke, or he's going to be very unhappy if it's another. He says, I can imagine that. Oh, when we said exciting new signings, we meant exciting new university graduates. Yeah, we'll see. I just always read the small print before you sign any contracts. That's the key thing to take away. On Akita, yeah, I think you're right. It's always a dangerous gamble to go 1-0 up and then try and try and defend. I think in the past, to be fair, that's the strategy that's worked quite well for them, especially when you consider how many injuries they've had, particularly at centre-back this season. I think Yudai Tanaka's kind of been in the form of his life for about 18 months. Last season and this, but I don't know if I know Martin Spivey's our Akita correspondent. I don't know if you agree. I think his form has dipped in the last couple of months. I've noticed him making more mistakes, which, to be fair, he was immaculate, you know, in the promotion season and for the first half of this season. But I think perhaps he's just a bit tired at this point. And I think he could normally be relied upon to help them protect a 1-0 lead fairly comfortably. I think he made a mistake. I forget which game it was, but I saw him make a mistake, led to a goal in a home game a round or two ago. And then obviously he was at fault, you know, towards the end of this match. So maybe he's just tired. And I think, to be honest, like, Akita's squad is probably quite tired at this point. It's been a tough old year, you know, first season in J2. So I don't think they necessarily did anything wrong or bad by playing on the counter here when they were 1-0 up. But yes, I think I watched Tony Pulis teams for 10 years, and you can't be too you can't be too disappointed if you've defended a lot and then you concede one goal at the end. That's the thing that can happen. That's kind of the chance that you take. But yeah, I think they'll both be absolutely fine. Yeah, especially for Akita, fantastic season, really, you know, compared to kind of preseason expectations. Gunma, yeah, I don't know. I think you mentioned that the defence looks solid. I think that will be the key. I think that they'd probably just about be okay. I think they've got just about enough points now. They'll eke out enough, but might not be pretty. And talking of not being pretty, yeah, Jeff, you kind of, the more chances they missed in this game, you just sensed the Gunma winner was coming. But yeah, it's all new boring Jeff. And got the job done. So yeah, I'm like you, Johnny. I've been burnt before, so we won't jinx them for next season just yet. Yeah, but thanks for all the analysis, Johnny. It's always good to get you on and talk. And I'm glad we had the full 11 games this time. No typhoon to spoil our fun this week. Before I let you go, we will talk about the round 32 games coming up this weekend. But let's take a quick break before we do, and then yeah, let's come back and let's talk about what's coming up this weekend. Extra time. Welcome back, everyone. Johnny and I have had another quick break, and yeah, just before I let you go, Johnny, let's look ahead to the J2 games coming up this weekend in round 32. I thought there was something wrong with my calendar, but it is October. It's really happening. So yeah, four games are taking place this Saturday, October the 2nd. We have Kofu against Yamagata, and Ryukyu hosting Okayama. The games with a kind of promotion or relegation sort of interest are Akita taking on Ehime, that's bottom, visiting 12th, and Nagasaki hosting Kyoto, that's in form, 5th place Nagasaki hosting the leaders. The rest of the action is on Sunday, and yeah, I felt like every single one of these seven games had at least one team with a lot to play for. So in no particular order, Sagamihara are hosting Mito, that's 20th place against 9th. Tochigi host Omiya at Kanseki Stadium's 14th against 17th, so two teams that also really need the points. Jeff Chiba are hosting Matsumoto, so 18th place visiting 10th. Kanazawa against Niigata, 21st against 3rd. I hope James watching on delay isn't left disappointed. Again, Yamaguchi hosts Tokyo Verde, 15th place hosting 11th. A big game in prospect, I think, at Mikuni World Stadium, isn't it? Kitakyushu hosting Gunma, so 19th place against 16th. But if Kitakyushu win that, they could drop Gunma right back into the thick of the relegation dogfight. Yeah, just switching briefly to the top of the table for the last match on the slate, it's Machida hosting Iwata, so 2nd place visiting 4th. On Sunday. Johnny, it's quite difficult to pick the kind of key games or the big games from that slate, isn't it? Are there any games that you've particularly got your eye on?
I think from Saturday, I noted that I think Kofu Yamagata would have been a great game, like it's been said every week, if there were playoffs, but sadly it's rather kind of meaningless. And Nagasaki Kyoto as well, I think that'll be a good game to watch, but it's also kind of tinged with that feeling like Nagasaki don't really have a ton to play for, and even if Kyoto lose, there's probably no problems there. So maybe on Saturday, Akita Ehime might be a kind of one for the neutral, maybe the sadists among you. But I think like for Ehime, looking at Akita quite comfortable in mid-table, that has to be the kind of game you target for a win. And then Sunday, like you say, there's something riding on it on every game for at least one of the teams. I think we basically agree. I kind of asterisked the two, Kitakyushu, Gunma. Obviously, Kitakyushu coming off that, like, the hard done by feeling against Matsumoto, and Gunma potentially with Genki Omai and Toshiya Tanaka back in the starting lineup. If I was betting, I'd say maybe a narrow home win, which would move Kitakyushu level in points with Gunma and really, really set the cat amongst the pigeons. And then again, I think maybe highest standard from both teams across the 90 minutes game might be Machida against Jubilo. Like you mentioned, John, I think Machida have issues putting a full 90 minutes together. If they can, then that has the potential to be possibly technically one of the best games in the season. But as I mentioned, Machida are on a 5-game unbeaten run, and that's the best they've managed this season. Can they kind of crack the code and extend it to 6 games? That'll be an interesting one to see. Do you have anything to kind of add to that?
No, I think that's a really good shout, actually. I think Machida will really want a kind of statement performance, I think, against Iwata to show how good they really are. That's an interesting looking game to watch. I would add Sagamihara against Mito. Sagamihara's form has been pretty good recently. They do grind out some home wins, 1-0 and so, but Mito are a very free scoring team, so I think the first goal in that game is very important. I think if Sagamihara get it, they might be able to grind out a 1-0 win, as they have done quite a few times in recent weeks. If Mito score first, Sagamihara have to come out and play, it could get very interesting. I also think, just for brutality, Tochigi Omiya has the potential to be very interesting, because I think Tochigi are going to be wanting to grind out a draw. And I think Omiya ordinarily would be okay with that, but I don't think draws are good enough right now. I think Omiya have got to go and try and win that game. And yeah, it might be a very interesting clash of one team really wanting to win, and it's kind of interesting when it's the away team that really wants to, you know, win, and the home team's happy with the points. So I think that could be, again, I think you said maybe for the neutral, not a great game, but what would you say? One for the sadists, was it?
Yeah.
Okay. If you're not sufficiently self-flagellated after Akita Ehime on Saturday, then I recommend Tochigi Omiya as a kind of dessert on Sunday. Yeah, I think we should move away from talking about football fixtures as sadism here, Johnny, I think, so before we get in trouble. But Johnny, thanks for the weekend preview. It's much appreciated, and thanks for all your analysis this week. It's really good to have you on and hear your thoughts. And people can follow you at Blog Gamba on Twitter, is that right?
That's right, yeah. If you're not already, please follow me on Twitter. I think, yeah, Gamba are playing this weekend, and then next week there's the international break, so I may have some J2 content up my sleeve. I've not fully decided yet, but I might have something for both J1 and J2 fans coming up in a couple of weeks. But thanks again for having me on, John. I always enjoy it.
No probs. Very pleased to hear that instead of taking a break during the internationals, like any sensible blogger, you're just going to blog about J2 instead. But I'm very happy to hear that. I'm looking forward to seeing what comes up. All right, Johnny, it's late. We need to go to bed. But please stay tuned. In a minute, you're going to hear Magic Mike Innes bringing you all the J3 latest in J Talk Short Corner. But that's all from me and Johnny. And take care. We'll speak to you soon. Bye for now. J Talk
Extra Time. Hello everyone, and welcome to J-Talk Short Corner, the mini-pod that keeps you up to date with events in J3 of the J-League. I'm your host, Mike Innes, and in this episode I'll be looking back on the weekend games in Round 20 and previewing fixtures coming up in Round 21 of the J3 season. Before we get started, a couple of items of J3 news since the last pod. The J-League have announced that 6 clubs competing in the JFL have been awarded J3 licences for 2022, making them eligible for promotion if they finish in the top 4. Iwaki FC are currently top of the division. Reinmeer Aomori, Suzuka Point Getters and FC Osaka remain within striking distance of 4th position. Vietein Mie and Nara Club are further off the pace. A situation to keep an eye on, with the possibility of new blood coming into the J-League. Vanrare Hachinohe's round 19 and 20 home games against Katare Toyama and AC Nagano Parseiro respectively, postponed because of a COVID outbreak among Hachinohe's playing staff, have been rescheduled. The match against Toyama will now be on Wednesday the 6th of October, Nagano visit 2 weeks later on Wednesday the 20th. Now on to the action in a week when there were crucial points won and lost, and could we be starting to see the emergence of one clear promotion favourite? As mentioned in the news roundup, Hachinohe's fixture against Nagano was postponed, which meant that Saturday the 25th of September saw just one match take place. A crowd of more than 4,000 gathered to watch Kagoshima United against FC Gifu. Kagoshima began with former Gifu man Osamu Henry Ioha in central defence. Gifu had top scorer Shota Kawanishi back and starting after an absence of two matches. But the headlines were grabbed instead by rookie forward Shunsuke Yamamoto of Kagoshima. Yamamoto was making only his second ever J-League start, and with less than 3.5 minutes on the clock, latched onto a Hiroki Akiyama through ball and sent in a first-time shot that looped off Takumi Fujitane's outstretched leg past Gifu keeper Takuya Matsumoto. And Yamamoto had a good chance for a second just after the half hour, but put Fogechi's low cross just the wrong side of the near post. Gifu had half chances just before the break, but Shunpei Fukahori's shot was blocked by Shogo Onishi, and Ioha headed the resulting corner off target. And things didn't get any better for Takeyoshi Anma's side in the second half, Onishi dealing comfortably with a series of longer ranging shots. In the closing moments, two efforts by Kawanishi drifted past the post, and the home side closed out the win for a final score of Kagoshima 1, Gifu 0. 10 points in 5 games since Nobuhiro Ueno took charge at Kagoshima, while, by way of comparison, Gifu's points tally over their last 5 matches stands at 3. Meanwhile, on Sunday the 26th, the big match of the round saw new frontrunners Roasso Kumamoto host third-place Fukushima United at the Egao Kenko Stadium. Kumamoto coach Takeshi Oki kept an unchanged starting lineup for the third game running, but his opposite number Yu Tokisaki is struggling for strikers following an injury to Hiroto Yukie last week at Fujieda. Riku Hashimoto, not a forward, began up front for the first time. Kumamoto thought they'd gone in front midway through the first half when Shuhei Kamimura glanced in, saw Kawahara's cross, only to be given offside. And moments later, Shun Ito's goal-bound effort forced a brilliant save out of Fukushima's ex-Kumamoto keeper Kaito Yamamoto. Indeed, it was a day for goalkeepers to shine, as in the 34th minute, a sweet Fukushima passing move set up Hiroto Moraoka, only for Yuya Sato to snuff out the chance with a brave interception. Sato was called into action again on 64 minutes, leaping to keep out Hayato Fukushima's spectacular swivelling volley. And the 35-year-old capped an outstanding display 10 minutes from time when he pulled off a trio of superb stops in quick succession, first getting down low to keep out Hiroki Higuchi's shot from the edge of the area, then somehow getting in front of Kota Mori's follow-up before diving once again to get to a further follow-up from Tokachi. Fukushima must have sensed it wasn't going to be their day, and within a couple of minutes, their central midfielder Uheiji Uehata was caught in possession in the area by Kumamoto sub Corky Sakamoto, who pulled it back for Castro Tales to steer it over the line. Cue scenes of jubilation among the Roasso supporters, who knew they'd seen their side weather a storm, but nevertheless looked set to emerge with the points. And indeed it finished, Kumamoto 1, Fukushima 0, a fourth straight win for Roasso, who are now unbeaten since early June. Huge disappointment for Fukushima, who surely would have got something from the game on another day against a keeper other than Sato, but who instead are looking at consecutive losses for the first time this season. With Kumamoto winning, it was all the more important for Nobuhiro Ishizaki's Katare Toyama to keep pace by beating bottom side Gainare Tottori at home. Both sides went into the game unchanged, which is to say, Toyama had a front two of Tsubasa Yoshihira and summer signing Mateus, while Tottori maintained their strike partnership between Yu Okubo and Daichi Ishikawa. And for Toyama, there was a disastrous start. They conceded in the first 90 seconds as veteran goalkeeper Yohei Nishibe first punched weakly at a cross and then lost his footing as he chased down the loose ball, allowing Tottori's rookie midfielder Yushi Nagashima the chance to clip home his second in three games. Nagashima had a good half chance for 2-0 only 5 minutes later, but pulled the ball across the face of goal from an acute angle, and it was only then that Katane woke up and began to press forward, Yoshihira getting in a powerful header that Ken Tajiri dropped down well to keep out. But in first half injury time, Toyama fell further behind as Tottori midfielder Hiroto Sese struck a 30-yard free kick into the wall and lashed the rebound past the unsighted Nishibe. In the second period, Katane failed to offer a serious threat to Gainare's lead, Shunta Takahashi wasting perhaps their best chance with an uncharacteristic miskick, and so the game ended Toyama 0, Tottori 2. Bad news indeed for the promotion hopes of Katare, who lost to another struggling side, Numazu, just a couple of games ago. A third win in six, though, for a seemingly improving Gainare under Kim Jong-sung. With other teams fluffing their lines, quietly moving back into contention are Tegevajaro Miyazaki, for whom early season stars Kaito Umeda and Kosuke Fujioka seem to have refound their form. At home to Azul Claro Numazu, Miyazaki were under pressure in the early stages of the game, goalkeeper Shunsuke Ueda producing a reaction save to tip onto the post a stunning volley by Ryo Watanabe. Ueda was then deceived by a long-range effort from Numazu captain Takuya Sugai, which dipped and swerved its way past him and into the net for a 32nd-minute opener. Tegevajaro tied things up almost immediately after half-time, a measured pass by Kazuki Chibu reaching the edge of the area and Umeda, who waited for a run and, when it came, picked out Fujioka for a simple finish past Ryusuke Otomo. On the hour, Umeda again received the ball just outside the box and this time sent a low shot arrowing into the bottom right-hand corner. Final score, Miyazaki 2, Numazu 1. And the J3 new boys can't be ruled out with attacking play like this, while Numazu, the division's lowest scorers, still lack a reliable cutting edge. An even game of few clear chances, FC Imabari 0, Iwate Gurugia Morioka 1, was decided 9 minutes from time when Brenner outmuscled home defender Ryota Ichihara and fired across the goal mouth for substitute Yuki Shikama to score. Iwate's celebrations demonstrated they knew the importance of that goal and the 3 points it gave them, maintaining their position in the hunt for promotion. But there's one win in eight now for Imabari, for whom their second league campaign has turned into a huge disappointment. Elsewhere in Shikoku, there was further trouble for Kamatamari Sanuki, who, like their island neighbours, were beaten 1-0 at home. The goal for visitors YSCC Yokohama came on 15 minutes when the home side failed to clear a corner. Hiroto Miyauchi lofted the ball back into the box and defender Kei Oshiro emerged from the pack to beat the offside trap and head in. Sanuki livened up in the second half when Mark Ajay Kurita appeared as a substitute, and fans of catastrophic J3 attempts to play the ball out of defence had one to add to their collection when a mix-up between YSCC captain Kento Dodate and teammate Kei Munechika presented a fine opportunity to Kentaro Shigematsu, whose shot was smartly saved by the impressive Ryosuke Sagawa. A welcome clean sheet and a first win in six for YSCC, Seneki almost inevitably didn't have it in them to build on last week's victory at Numazu. The team with a bye in round 20 were Fujieda My FC. Now on to the current league standings. The top five this week are Kumamoto, retaining pole position with 36 points from 18 games. Then it's Iwate and Miyazaki, both with 34 from 19. Toyama with 32 from 18. And Fukushima, 32 from 19. The bottom five are Fujieda in 11th place with 20 points from 18 games, Numazu with 18 from 19, Tottori with 17 from 19, and Imabari and Sanuki both have 16 from 19. Just time now for a quick look ahead to the matches in round 21. There are two games on Saturday the 2nd of October. Surely a must-win game for Gifu at home to Imabari, and improving Kagoshima are at home to YSCC. Then on Sunday the 3rd, there's another big game for Fukushima. 5th versus 4th, in fact, as they host Toyama. Leaders Kumamoto will look to continue their winning streak at home to Fujieda. Miyazaki face the potential banana skin of a trip to Tottori. Let's hope there's better COVID news from Hachinohe and that they're able to return to action at Numazu. And Nagano are at home to bottom side Sanuki. The team with a bye in round 21 are Iwate Gurugia Morioka. And a quick reminder that the game between Hachinohe and Toyama has been rearranged for this coming Wednesday, the 6th of October. With all the week's business seen to then, that's it for this mini-pod. All that remains is for me to say, thanks for listening, enjoy your football, and see you next time. Bye for now.